Don Mockels, and you're listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 28, for the week of July 15th, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmockholtz.com. That is spelled donmockholtz.com. Two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, July 15th, the moon is a crescent in our morning sky headed towards new moon at the end of our week. This is another good week for heading out to see the evening sky and stay out until you get too tired to go on. The spring sky is in your west and the summer sky is in your east, along with a couple of giant planets and a bright comet. What's not to like? Comet Neowise enters our evening sky this week, joining four other comets. We'll discuss these five comets later in the podcast. The moon passes north of the planet Venus in the morning sky on both July 16th and 17th, a good photo opportunity. 2 days later, July 18th and 19th, the moon passes north of the planet Mercury. So we have Mercury, Venus, and Mars in the morning sky, Jupiter and Saturn in the evening sky. Uranus and Neptune are about 20 degrees on either side of Mars. This is a good week for a planet marathon. This is rare, and what I am suggesting we do this week is something that rarely can be done, and after this week, our next opportunity will be in 2 years, June 2022. That is to view each planet in order, or in reverse order, or better yet, first in direct order, then in reverse order, like a flash mob descending upon a train station to sing a song from The Sound of Music. Let's all get out there this week and flash mob the planets in the sky. By time Mercury rises in your pre-dawn sky, Jupiter will be in the opposite direction, 166 degrees away, and about a half a dozen degrees high in your southwestern sky. All of the other major planets, Venus through Neptune, will be somewhere in between. Pluto, the dwarf planet, does not factor in this exercise of major planets, but if you want to include it, it is just below Jupiter, and it will be difficult at that altitude. I'd recommend Thursday, July 16th, or Friday, July 17th, 90 minutes before sunrise. Find Neptune, then Uranus. Next is Saturn and nearby Jupiter. Bright Mars will be high in the sky. Then look at Earth, a mountain or a tree or even a man-made object, because you won't see any of those on the other planets. Then our moon, Venus, and finally Mercury. Then go in reverse. From Mercury, find Venus, our moon, Earth, Mars, the setting planets, Jupiter and Saturn. Then in twilight, and this might be difficult, Uranus and Neptune. Note the size, color, and shape of each. Why our moon? Because you can also count the moons you see. Four around Jupiter, one to four for Saturn, perhaps one for Neptune, and ours. You can do this as late as July 22nd, where Mercury is at its greatest elongation from the Sun, but not necessarily better placed for this exercise. However, note that after July 18th, you are likely to lose our moon in the morning twilight. So let's get out there this week for a planet marathon. The planet Saturn reaches opposition on next Monday, July 20th. That's when we are between it and the Sun. It is closest to us, and it is in our sky all night long. The larger and closer planet Jupiter reached opposition on July 14th, so now both planets are ideally placed for observation. What can we say about Saturn? It has rings, visible rings, that takes people's breath away when they first see it through a telescope. About half of those who see Saturn for the first time will comment on it like, "Wow, I can see the rings." The other half are too awestruck to talk, or maybe they're just trying to be cool. Sometimes they ask if we put a photo of the planet inside the telescope. After 50 years of observing, Saturn is still an amazing object to me. Saturn is slightly smaller than Jupiter and takes 29 years to go around the Sun compared to Jupiter's 12 years. Saturn is about 10 times farther from us than is the Sun, so it's about 900 million miles away. Because everything is so far away, astronomers use the speed of light as a yardstick. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second, or about 300,000 kilometers per second. When you look at the planet Saturn, the light you see left Saturn 80 minutes before, meaning it is 80 light minutes away. The Sun is 8 light minutes away. The Moon is 1.5 light seconds away. The closest star is 4 light years away. One of the earliest jokes I ever heard is about Saturn. It goes like this. Saturn is lighter than water, so if you placed it in your bathtub, it would float, but it would leave a ring in your bathtub. Astronomy jokes. So get out and observe Saturn. Both it and Jupiter remain close together, and watch them over the next few months. They are 7 degrees apart now, in a month, 8 degrees. Then, by late September, they begin closing in on each other until they get within a tenth of a degree of each other on December 21st. At that time, both planets will be only 30 degrees from the Sun, low in the southwest, as dusk descends upon the sky. Will you be able to see the International Space Station this week? This week begins July 15th and continues through Tuesday, July 21st. This week we have 5 zones. If you live north of 35 degrees north, this is your week. The ISS will be in both your morning and evening sky all week, sometimes more than 3 times a night. Canada, England, Iceland, Estonia, Poland, I know you're listening. I see it on the stats. Russia, you get plenty of International Space Station this week. From 15 to 35 degrees north, you will see the ISS in your morning and evening sky, but only until about July 18th, and then none. Alabama, that's you. Get out there early in the week. From 15 degrees north through 20 degrees south, you can see it on the evening of July 15th, and then nothing until late in the week when it will be in your morning sky. Further south, from minus 20 to minus 35 degrees, that's you, Australia and Argentina and South Africa. You can begin seeing the International Space Station late in the week in your morning sky. New Zealand? Not this week. To determine where it will be in your sky, go to the website heavens-above.com and enter your location, then click on ISS. And if you're going to go out in the evening to see Comet Neowise, visit heavens-above.com first to see if the International Space Station will be passing over. And when you see them, more than likely, they are watching the comet, too. There's been some great Comet Neowise images from the space station this past week. Astronomical observatories. Last week, I discussed amateur astronomer observatories, both those with a dome and the roll-off roof types. This week, I want to describe the one that I built in 1993, which served me well for 25 years. I had originally thought of building two small observatories, one for the large binoculars and one for the 10-inch reflector. But with limited space, I decided to build one. 4 pages of photos of this observatory are on my website. That document is called Podcast 28, My Colfax Observatory. And the address was at 595 Hill Haven Drive in Colfax, California. My 10-inch reflector telescope was being used on an English yoke mount, which I had built more than a year before and was using on my back deck, requiring no counterweights and working in an equatorial fashion. This mount made comet hunting comfortable. When aimed at the horizon, however, the telescope line of sight was only 2 feet high, and some of my comet hunting was done rather low in the sky, so I did not want to clip my light path with the walls of the observatory. Most roll-off roof observatories have high walls, and either the telescope is elevated on a pier so that you can see low in the sky, or the astronomer simply does not observe objects near the horizon. I had considered jacking the telescope up, but decided it would be easier to lower the walls than to raise the telescope. So I built the walls to a height of only 24 inches, 0.6 meters. What filled in the remainder of the wall? I actually used 2 solutions, one for the first 23 years and the second for the final 2 years. As seen in the photos on Podcast 28, My Colfax Observatory, the first 2 pages of photos shows the panels. They were trimmed from 4 by 8 foot sheets of plywood. Each could be lifted in and out of place depending upon where I wanted to search. As the upper right photo on page 1 shows, I could even keep the roof completely closed, remove a couple of panels, and aim the large binoculars out the side to sweep, in this case, the western sky. I did that several times and was protected from cold and the wind. But more often, I would roll down the roof and, in the summer, if it didn't rain, could keep it rolled down for weeks at a time. And then I would remove the eastern panels to sweep the eastern sky. The other panels would remain in place, as shown in the lower photos on page 1, to block wind and stray light. The roof had rolled asphalt over tar paper, not shingles, and in the course of 25 years, I had to replace the roof twice. The roof structure weighed about 1,000 pounds, or 450 kilograms, I'm guessing. I used a manual crank winch and cable to help the roof down. Gravity handled most of that as it was on a slope, but to roll it up, it took a bit of work. Yes, there were a few times I was out there at the start of a rainstorm rolling up the roof, sometimes in the middle of the night. Page 2 of Podcast 28, My Colfax Observatory, shows the inside of the observatory with the 10-inch reflector on the English yoke mount, the big binoculars, which were on wheels, some of the panels, and the roof in the background. It all worked well for many years. The observatory measured 16 feet, that's 5 meters north-south, and 10 feet, that's 3 meters east and west. The roof rolled off to the south. If I had to do it again, the roof would roll off to the north, giving me more southern sky. Now, I'm not including a photo of the time it was hit by a car. But it was, and the repair brought it back to almost normal. The final two pages of photos show the revision, which I did in 2016. Now the roof and full sides were one unit, and they rolled down on its rails, this time using an electric winch. This left me with low walls, same walls as before, 2 feet high all around the telescope. And by this time, I was using my 18-inch or half-meter reflector. I still made 4 wood panels, each 4 feet wide, that could be placed anywhere on the side of the observatory to prevent wind and light trespass. In my opinion, this revision was an improvement over the original design. I could no longer open a couple of panels and observe with the roof still closed, but that was of little loss compared to the gain of not having to remove and replace panels every time I opened or closed the observatory. One of my biggest disappointments was that when we sold the property last year, it was not sold to an astronomer. We tried. In the year prior, we mentioned on social media that it would be for sale. We posted a notice at the Riverside Telescope Makers Conference and sent emails to local astronomy clubs. Along with an observatory, you got a fully remodeled house, garage, and 6 acres. One person did show interest, but he ended up buying property elsewhere. I believe the present owners use it for storage. So that's how I built a roll-off roof observatory for a Dobsonian telescope that I used to look near the horizon. The original cost in 1993 was about $1,000, using in some cases secondhand wood, and I did all the labor myself, building it in about 4 weeks. The revision in 2016 cost nearly as much. Plans for the Machholz Observatory are not copyrighted, and you are welcome to build your own. Comets. The position for all 5 comets mentioned this week are available on Podcast 27, Comet Positions. All 5 comets are also shown on Podcast 28, Map 1. Our brightest comet this week continues to be Comet C-2020-F3 Neowise. Nowadays, such a comet is not just big in the sky, but big on social media. It's not too late to realize the comet to see is Neowise. Since July 1st, Comet Neowise has been putting on a fantastic show in the morning northern sky, easily visible to the naked eye, magnitude 1 initially, with a tail several degrees long. It stands bright and solid in the twilight sky. This is despite the fact the elongation of the comet, the number of degrees it is from the sun as seen from the Earth, is small, 11 degrees on July 1st, and increasing about a degree a day. Only a bright, fine comet can be seen under those conditions. And Comet Neowise is one of the brightest and finest to come by in a few years. Don't miss this opportunity to see this comet. Do you remember Comet Atlas? It was expected to become a bright comet, but it disintegrated. Then Comet Swan. It failed too. I did not say this then, but I want to say this now. The reason that bright comets are so noteworthy and memorable is because they happen so rarely. This is rare. Comet Neowise is rare. As we so painfully saw with Comet Atlas and Swan, even when all the stars are aligned, so to speak, for a bright comet, with ideal viewing geometry, a robust comet, these comets do not always deliver. We blame it on the unpredictability of comets, our Or better said, we do not fully understand how comets behave. And no two comets behave similarly. Years from now, people will say, Comet Neowise? Now that was a good one. On July 7th, I tried to observe Comet Neowise in the daytime, but failed. I picked it up in my 18-inch, that's half-meter, reflector while the sky was still relatively dark, and followed it as the sky brightened. My last view of it before it faded into the background was several minutes before sunrise, while the sun was still 3.3 degrees below the horizon. Refer to Podcast 28, Map 3, for Comet Neowise in the evening sky. The comet officially enters the evening sky on July 14th, when its position in right ascension becomes greater than the sun's. More importantly, as seen from mid-northern latitudes, the comet climbs quickly in the sky after that, rising more than 2 degrees higher each night. That translates for the next week to a later set time, later by about 20 minutes per night. We will finally see the comet against a dark sky and high enough in the sky for a decent view. The brightness for the next week is likely to dim by about a magnitude from 2.5 to 3.5. Nevertheless, it should still be visible to the unaided eye in a moonless sky for the next week, showing a fine dust tail and even a dimmer and straighter gas tail. Use binoculars on it and a telescope too. Look for non-uniformity in the head of the comet and in the tail of the comet. Look for color in each. And that nucleus, the dirty snowball that's only a few miles across and driving all that activity? You cannot see it no matter how hard you look. There's too much dust and gas around it. But we know it's there. The fainter comet Lemon, C2019U6, is also in our evening sky. It's at magnitude 8. It should be visible in binoculars, and with a telescope, the long tail should still be visible. It is slowly dimming and moving north. And don't forget comet 2017 T2 Pan-STARRS, now at magnitude 10. It has been a steady performer and will remain in our evening sky through the end of the summer. Comet 2P Encke is also in our evening sky, but it is low in the west after sunset. It is rapidly dimming. Finally, Comet 88P Howell is slowly brightening in our evening sky. It's now about magnitude 11. When you get tired of looking at comets in the evening sky, turn to Jupiter and Saturn. A busy night. This week, we'll learn the constellation Sagittarius. Like Scorpius last week, Sagittarius is a southern constellation in the zodiac, which means the sun, moon, and planets frequent this area. Presently, both Jupiter and Saturn are within the boundaries of Sagittarius. The sun reaches its most southerly location in this constellation, and that occurs each year on December 21st. This constellation is identified on Podcast 28, Map 1, and a more detailed map is Podcast 28, Map 2. Sagittarius is supposed to be a centaur archer, a part horse, part man, shooting an arrow into the heart of Scorpius. But it looks like a teapot. And if you have dark skies, some Milky Way dust and gas looks like steam coming out of the spout. I am not kidding. Look for it. The center of our Milky Way galaxy is in this direction, but you cannot see the center because of all the dust and gas between us and the center, which is about 30,000 light years away. But a radio telescope can image it. So here is Sagittarius. Learn it well. And as you get more involved in astronomy, this will be a place you will return to often. Sagittarius is home to many Messier objects, but Two that we are going to look at this week are both globular clusters, M22 and M28. They are identified on podcast 28, map 2. M22 is the larger and brighter globular cluster. Visible to the unaided eye, give it a try. In binoculars, it will appear as a large fuzzy ball. Magnitude 5.4, and nearly as large as a full moon, you may be able in binoculars to pick up some of its 500,000 stars. M22 is close for a globular cluster, about 10,000 light years away. Now compare that to M28, which is almost 3 degrees to the west. Both should be visible in the same binocular field of view. Compare the two. M28 is about 8 times fainter at magnitude 7.8 and less than a third the size of M22. M28 is also further away at 18,000 light years. Before you put your binoculars away for the night, look around this area. You'll see more globular clusters, open clusters, and nebula. With your telescope, examine both M22 and M28 at low power. Notice the shape and density of each. Now, increase the power to look for strings of stars and non-uniformity in each cluster. Next week, we'll look at more objects in this area. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode number 28 for July 15th, 2020. I'm Don Mockholtz. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmockholtz.com. That is spelled donmockholz.com. Two H's. This is where you can get the maps. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky. We'll continue observations of Comet Neowise, and we'll observe more objects in the southern skies. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.